Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to this week's Runner's World podcast with me, Ben Hobson.
And me, Carrie McCarthy.
This week, we are talking all things running gear. We've decided that it's time to have a bit of a breakdown, Carrie. Not a mental, like physical breakdown, a breakdown of running kit.
A rundown, perhaps, might be a better phrase. We have been absolutely delighted to see how many people have embraced during lockdown what we smugly already knew, which is that running is ace. Lots of people have taken it up for the first time. Lots of people have gone back to it after a break. Lots of existing runners have just kept it going, which is wonderful. And we have seen lots of chats online about people wanting to know what's the best kit to buy. It can be all very confusing. There is that old adage about running as the simplest sport, one of the least expensive sports to do, because all you really need is a pair of trainers. I don't know about you, Ben, I would say that's probably, that adage goes back about 20, 25 years, and it's not necessarily applicable anymore.
I don't think so. I think that if I was to look in my cupboard, the one pair of sure rule is definitely out the window already.
Yeah.
But I think this is kind of why we wanted to broach the topic, really, because there is that sort of hard and fast mindset about running being the most accessible. And it is, because, you know, it is physically just running, and that's kind of a lot, you know, something that everyone can do to a degree if they take it on as a steady process and sort of rediscover how to do it. But the kit side of stuff can be a bit of a minefield, especially if you started running 20 years ago or something like that, when language around kit was way different as well. If you pronated and you needed a support shoe or a control shoe or all this sort of stuff, where that sort of stuff doesn't really exist in the modern world, does it?
No, I mean, that's probably, shoes is probably a good place to start, actually, because that is the fundamental piece of kit that one needs. And yeah, you're absolutely right. Until, I would say, 5-6 years ago, shoes existed in what the shoe brands like to call silos or buckets in America, which is basically different categories depending on what type of runner you were and how your foot lands when it hits the floor. So if you were a neutral runner, i.e. biomechanically efficient, and you didn't do any weird Phoebe from Friends style stuff, then you would need a neutral cushion shoe. There were performance shoes, which are also neutral, but more stripped down, lighter, for kind of, you know, mountain goats and speed demons. There were stability shoes for overpronators, i.e. people whose feet excessively roll inwards when they hit the floor, which can cause all sorts of problems all the way up your leg. And motion control shoes, which is basically a much sturdier, more severe form of stability shoe. Yeah, that kind of doesn't exist anymore, because over time, the materials that are available to shoe brands have changed. There's been innovation, there's been invention. And also the science has moved on a bit in terms of, actually, this stuff that we're putting in our shoes, is it necessary? Is it helping people? Could it be secretly, you know, at best doing nothing, at worst causing injury itself? So kind of what happens now is, you know, the shoe brands have produced, rather than shoes which fall into one of those four categories, they will produce numerous shades of grey. And we're actually moving towards a kind of a situation where a runner could almost find their perfect pair of shoes if they're prepared to look amongst the different brands and not be brand loyal, because they're very kind of graduated. You can get a slightly neutral shoe, a very neutral shoe, a slight stability shoe, moderate stability, heavy stability. So you can, you know, the advantage is now you can really look for something that absolutely suits you. The disadvantage is it's bloody confusing.
Yeah, and also to be, you've got to be either find a very generous running shop that you know well who will let you try on numerous numbers of shoes and go running in them, which, you know, is good practice for a good running shop. But at the same time, you're going to be forking out money if you want to try lots of different shoes.
Yeah,
I think on the we should on the stability bit. So basically, to sort of simplify the whole process, a stability shoe is anything that has something built into the medial side of the shoe, as in the instep of the shoe. So when you pronate and your foot moves, you sort of your ankle and everything rolls inwards. Pronation was always seen as sort of a bad thing that would lead to injury. So shoe manufacturers decided that putting a large bit of plastic in the bottom of a shoe to stop your foot from pronating too much was a good move. I think that the reason why that's changed so much is that people have understood that biomechanically when running, pronation is just shock absorption. That's, you know, a moderate pronator. Severe pronation is obviously something different, but everyone will pronate to a degree. And to stop that process with a bit of plastic in your shoe was actually causing people to become injured. So I think that's probably part of the story why stability isn't so much talked about anymore.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, some pronation is completely natural and we don't want to stop it all. Excessive pronation or over pronation, you know, you kind of do want to stop doing it, but there are different ways to doing it. And, you know, putting a big medial post, as it was called, a big wadge of plastic on the inside of your kind of the heel section at the back was kind of the equivalent of putting sandbags out, really, to stop the tide coming in. It was, you know, it was a fairly rudimentary maneuver. And so now what happens is you get all manner of increasingly subtle devices which achieve the same thing, but not quite so aggressively. So they don't actually stop your foot in its tracks. They just kind of gently guide it back to the middle. You know, there are things called guide rails, which are, you know, essentially a rail which runs around the top of the midfoot, round the back of the heel and round the outside of the shoe. And you kind of think of it like if your foot is the bowling ball, the guide rails are those kind of, you know, when you go bowling with your kids and you put the rails up on the side so it can't go in the gutter. They're just keeping the ball, i.e. your foot, in the middle. There is also a school of thought now that actually people, one of the disadvantages of having these devices and shoes is that it discourages you, or it discourages your foot from strengthening itself and being able to kind of cure itself of overpronation. You know, you can do foot strengthening exercises. And you can change the way that you run in order to not have this problem. But obviously, you know, mostly people are like, oh, can I be bothered to do that? I just like going out for a run 3 times a week. Give me a piece of kit that does this, and that's great. I don't want to have to get home and start picking up towels with my toes and running golf balls under my feet and doing whatever else it is I have to do to strengthen these tendons. And that's fair enough. But increasingly, the message, the current wisdom now from shoe brands is, when you're choosing a pair of shoes, go on comfort. Is very simple. There is still value, you know, there is still value in going to a specialist running store and having your gait analysed and listening to the advice of the staff there if they are appropriately trained. However, if that's not something you want to do, you want to buy your shoes online, or you've got, you know, a brand that you've tried and it's always worked for you, don't overcomplicate it. It should go by comfort. The research overwhelmingly shows that the shoe that you find most comfortable when you put it in your foot is probably the shoe for you. There's a reason why. Your body's very sophisticated. It knows the messages to give you.
Yeah, I mean, and that's as much as we've ever tried to communicate, I think, is that exactly what you say. The body is very good at signaling whether or not something is working efficiently with you and the way that you move. So from a shoe point of view, if it's comfortable, that's the best place to start.
Yeah, I mean, there were people listening to this that go, these two clowns don't know what they're talking about. I've worn Asics Gel Kyano since version 5 and it's on version 27, always done me proud. To which I say, fine, that's great. You've worked out what works for you. But should the Kyano, for example, become unavailable one day, don't stress about it. There will be more than one shoe out. There will be many shoes out there that will do just as good a job for you should you want to go experimenting and look for them. Just choose based on comfort and try not to get weirded out by the science.
I think that, and again, price is another thing that we should touch upon. I think that those starting out, and they'll see prices immediately rocketing into the 130, 150 bracket, just a sort of a, on a on a base model in a range, it can be quite a sort of it's quite a commitment spending that much money. And obviously, if you, the more money you spend, you can get into the 200s quite quickly. Price doesn't always dictate that it's the best choice, but at the same time, it's worth investing some money into your shoes, I think, initially.
It is. Sometimes you can be looking online and say, well, this shoe's 60 quid and this one's 120, and to my eye, they look kind of the same to me. If you, and that's totally understandable, but if you had those two shoes in front of you, one in each hand, you know, even though you might not know the names of the different bits of the shoes or be able to tell what materials it's made out of, you would really be able to tell the difference in quality. So my guide would be, if you are, you know, a weekend warrior, if you're somebody who's taken up running and you just want to do a half hour trot a couple of times a week, you know, because the doctor said you should or whatever, or for mental headspace, then I would probably look at spending no more than about 80 quid for that. Yeah. It's likely that you're not going to be buying a current season shoe, but, you know, joys of the interweb, you can buy shoes from last season now, which are obviously still absolutely brilliant. They're just significantly reduced because the brands are bringing out new shoes and new ranges all the time. So don't be afraid to go on, you know, the Runner's World website or Amazon, or just kind of shop around and see what you can find. In terms of, if you've been running for a little bit, you've decided, oh, I need a you know, a race shoe, and I need my long Sunday run shoe, and, you know, I could do with a few different pairs, I would say you can get the job done for between 100 and 130. Now, that might sound like a lot of money. Sorry, that's for each pair, not for numerous pairs. Yeah. That might sound like a lot of money, but these days, a shoe will very often, due to the sophistication of the materials used, it will last you beyond 500 miles, which always used to be the kind of the standard metric for, make sure your shoe lasts you 6 months or 500 miles, depending on how frequently you run.
Yeah.
You can get shoes now that last 700-800 miles, and you have to ask yourself, do I want a shoe that's going to conk out after 200 miles, but it costs me 60-70 quid, or do I want to suck it up now and not have to think about this for the next year, possibly a couple of years, depending on how many miles I clock?
There's an actual positive outcome of investing in yourself. I find that if you actually, you know, take your time, you choose the right thing that is comfortable, as you say, and then you put some money into it, it shows that you're, you know, it's a sort of, it's a funny way of committing, but you are committing very much then to this sort of, like, I'm going to go running and I'm going to go in my new shoes, which might have cost me a bit of money, but you know what? I'm going to really enjoy running in those shoes. And that helps.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, all the research shows that if people get a kind of a mental bounce when they buy new kit, because obviously they want to go out and show off in it and they feel good about it. So yeah, and obviously the more you spend on the shoes, the more likely you are to actually put them on and go out and not just spend a fortune in shoes and stick them to the back of the cupboard.
Yeah, true.
Having said that, we both know plenty of people who've taken out gym memberships and not used them.
Yes.
Including ourselves, yes. Probably.
When you say we know people.
So, we know people, yeah, when we look in the mirror. When for those who look online and see shoes at 150, 160, you know, the most expensive shoes I think you and I have come across are probably the Nike shoes that, you know, that Eliud Kipchoge did a sub 2 hour marathon, and they came in at £250.
Yeah.
Asics have some around that mark as well. Mm-hmm. For 99.9% of the running population, that is not something you need to worry about or get involved in or think, oh, am I exponentially getting bang for buck there?
Yeah.
The reason why those shoes are marked so highly is because A, it's partly marketing, it's hype, and B, they have features in them which really are only of benefit for extremely accomplished runners who are looking for, you know, marginal gains, to use a British cycling term.
Yeah. No, exactly. I think that, you know, they may well aid your performance to a degree. If you're looking to run a new 5K and you put PB time and you want to really, you know, take every single precautionary measure that you can outside of training really, really hard and all of those things, then yes, I think those shoes have a time and a place. But you will equally run that PB in a less expensive pair of shoes by just sort of, I think, changing a few habits rather than spending more money.
It's a bit like the guy, isn't it, who's kind of spent an extra grand on a carbon fiber frame for his bike, but then he's had, you know, 8 pints and a curry the night before he goes out.
Yeah,
it's, you know, it's kind of like you could spend less money and you know, change some of your habits, and you would get a similar benefit. But again, it's personal choice. And you and I are so lucky because we get, you know, we get a lot of the new stuff into test, and so we get to see what it's like, yeah. and we get to experience these things. And I kind of, you know, I understand when people are like, oh yeah, but I need to have that new thing because everyone's chatting about it. And that's cool. If you love that kind of thing and you're an early adopter and you want to buy the new thing, whatever it is, whether it's headphones or a cap or shoes or whatever, then cool. Whatever gets you out running, whatever keeps you on the road, whatever keeps you healthy and moving.
Yeah. I mean, just to give an example, I think just to really clarify, there was a, there's a pair of shoes that Reebok make called the Reebok Floatride Energy. And we were all fairly cynical within the office about Reebok and their running output because they'd very much moved into the world of CrossFit and their running shoes had sort of dwindled a little bit. They came in for testing and across the board, everyone loved them. And they were about £60, I think. And it just goes to show that now and again, it's this very simple running shoe. It's a neutral platform. It's got a probably like an 8 mil drop or something like that. There's no fancy laces. It's just a good, well-made, simple running shoe. And across the board, everyone really liked it. And that goes to show that you don't have to. And then when we were wearing them to run in them, everyone was really enjoying running. And it wasn't an expensive shoe. And it's the same feeling of putting on your, you know, Next Percent Turbo, whatever, is the same feeling. So there's a sort of, there's definitely sort of some shoes out there which are probably, I don't know, under the radar, which are just as good as everything else.
Yeah, this is why sometimes if you have the kind of the time or the inclination to do it, it is worth experimenting. I mean, we only discovered that shoe because of where we work.
Mm.
You know, I'll be quite honest, had I been just sort of somebody going about my business and I'd seen an ad for it, I would have completely ignored it for the reasons that you say. Well, I wouldn't have associated Reebok with running, but gems like this come up. And on a, you know, it's a classic example, that shoe and shoes like it, of reminding us what it's important to look for in a shoe, which is when you put the shoe on, does it fit properly?
Yeah.
It sounds like a really kind of almost stupidly simple point to make, but you would be shocked at the number of people who will go with a shoe that doesn't fit properly just because it's the brand that they want or it has the aesthetics that they think look cool.
Yeah.
Does it? You know, is there enough room in the forefoot for your toes to splay a little bit because it's going to splay out when your foot lands?
Yeah.
Is there a snug fit in the midfoot? Is your heel, when you've got it tied how you normally would tie it, is your heel snug or is it rattling around in the back?
Yeah.
Those are the basics. From there, does it feel like it gives you adequate bounce?
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Does it feel durable? Does it feel as though it's responsive, which means is the shoe moving with your foot when it, you know, your heel connects with the floor, then rolls through to your forefoot? Or does it feel like you're kind of running in wellies a little bit?
Yeah.
You know, all those things are the basics. And then, of course, the only other thing to consider is breathability. Do your feet get really hot and sweaty? And weatherproofing. If you go out for a run in the rain, you know, is the rain going to get through or not?
I mean, on that, trail shoes. Obviously, very much when we talk about one shoe, one pair of shoes will do it all. Not necessarily the case. Trail shoes are definitely worth investing in. Unfortunately, if you have a brand and a shoe model that you really love and you think that will equate to the same in a trail shoe, doesn't necessarily work out that way. But again, because of just basically the construction elements of a trail shoe are different from a road shoe. There's a few things that, you know, that you'll notice: tread pattern, elevated lugs for grip. You'll see that trail shoes tend to have a slightly wider toe box, which, you know, is actually way more comfortable and something that you kind of want normal shoes to have. But you know, a trail shoe, they're much more robust. They'll have more structure to them, and some more protective elements, especially around the toes. Some even have something called a rock plate, which is built into the sole to stop you from hurting the bottom of your feet if you're running on particularly rough terrain. So there's trail shoes are a whole different kettle of fish, but the same principle applies. Comfort is definitely going to be the main thing. And you just want to basically go from, is it comfortable? Yes. Okay, what terrain am I running on? Is it going to be dry, single trail sort of grassy bits? Okay, well, I don't need a load of grip. Or am I plunging through mud? All right, I need loads of grip. And I think then, you know, again, as you said about running shoes, nowadays there is such a fine scale of different shoe that you can get. You will be able to find something that suits all of your needs.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a good point about not just necessarily going with the road shoe brand that you like so much and looking for what trail shoes they do. There's a reason why the most popular trail shoes are made by trail and off-road specific companies who don't really have a presence in the road shoe market, such as Innovate and Salomon and La Sportiva. They are specialists in what they do. And, you know, now you can, if you are somebody who, you know, I just want to run from my house to the park and then run around on the grass or do a park run or whatever, there's a shoe for that. If you love doing cross country and diving through sludge and mud and puddles, there's a shoe for that. If you want to go up to the Lake District and be like a mountain goat and go from rock to rock and jump around on moss and lichen and heather, there's a shoe for that. So you need to make sure that you look first and foremost, what surface am I going to be running on? And then look, you know, start from the bottom up with a trail shoe. What's the underneath of the shoe like? And is it matched to the surface I'm going to be running on? Second from that, is it going to give me the protection I need? If you like, you know, diving through the undergrowth and through woods, and like you say, where there's going to be kind of like tree roots and rocks, are you going to be protected? And then thirdly, obviously comfort as well. There are very few stability features on trail shoes. So those medial posts that we were talking about and things that keep your foot rolling forward in a straight line, all bets are off with trail, because obviously when you're running on uneven surfaces, uphill and downhill, your foot does not land in the same way. So you don't need those features. So therefore, all it comes down to is comfort, which, as you say, is the toe box wide enough? Is there enough cushioning, etc.?
That's shoes. I feel like that could be a podcast in itself, but we should talk about some other components of the running wardrobe. Socks. Let's get into socks, because it's, I think, often a bypassed and a neglected part of the running wardrobe. People just will throw on the old pair of three for a pound Dunlops from Sports Direct or something like that and crack on, and they do work to a degree. There's nothing wrong with that, but you will probably have an elevated experience, shall we say, if you invest a little bit in a nice sock.
Yeah, you won't be coming home after a few runs and saying, well, running gives you blisters, I'm not doing that again.
Yeah,
because that's a lot of the time, that's what will happen. The cheaper the sock, the more likely you are to pick up rubbing and chafing and blisters, and, you know, have the sock bunching up underneath your foot and the elastic going around the cuff at the top and all those kinds of things. You know, when I first started running 105 years ago, I was shocked that a sock would cost 15, 16 quid.
Yeah.
You can get socks now that were at the really top end that cost like 27, 28 quid. And, you know, again, you don't need those. So I would say the sweet spot is somewhere between 10 and 15 quid per pair of socks.
Yeah,
which might horrify some listeners, those who are like, well, I buy my normal socks, you know, five pairs from Marks and Spencer for 10 quid. Why should this be any different? You get what you pay for. So what you need to look for on a pair of running socks is, are there seamless toes? People get a lot of blisters when they wear socks that have seams across, you know, at kind of like where the toe meets your foot.
Yeah.
If there are seams there, they're going to rub over the longer miles. You want seamless toes. You want durability, you want breathability, you want the weave to be such that your foot is not going to get hot and sweaty.
Yeah.
You want them to be elasticated in the right places. There will be arch support, so that it just, if you've got slightly flat feet, it will lift your arches a little bit and also hug the sock to your foot in a more ergonomic shape, so it doesn't kind of like bunch up in the middle.
Yeah.
There will probably be ventilation holes at points. There will be padding on underneath the balls of the foot and on the heel, so that if you land particularly heavily, it will just sort of help a little bit as well.
Yeah.
Now, you know, it might sound like, oh, that sounds a bit complicated, but I would recommend just buying one pair first, spend 10, 12 quid, just Google best running socks. I'm not going to start making recommendations because, again, all these things are quite personal. I have my favourites, but then people might buy them and they don't suit them and they think, well,
yeah,
that's a load of nonsense.
Yeah, yeah.
So just Google best running socks. There are tons of brands out there.
Right. And this isn't necessarily a kit chat, but this is, and I think this is something that I've mentioned previously, but you put a bit of lube on your toes, don't you?
I do.
Yeah.
I slather it on. So lube is, I would say, is one of those things that's absolutely essential. I remember one year when we were at the London Marathon Expo and Runners World had a stand there, and one of my jobs was obviously to field questions from sort of readers who were coming up who'd read the mag, or nervous first-time marathoners who wanted their questions answered. And a middle-aged man came up to me and said, I've heard something about lubrication, but I don't know what it is. What is it? So I kind of explained that it's, you know, it's essentially just Vaseline or any other kind of unguent like that. And you put it on areas where you think there is likely to be chafing, such as your toes, your heels, you know, in between your thighs, and for blokes wearing a t-shirt on your nipples.
Mm.
And he just stared at me wordlessly in disgust and just went, that's appalling. He turned on his heel and walked off.
But you turned me onto this. You told me about putting some on my toes, and for, especially for long runs. It's quite an interesting, as we're talking about shoes and socks and the feet.
Yeah.
There's just a point there to recommend, if you've not tried it, get some Body Glide or some like chamois cream if you're a cyclist, try some of that or whatever you want. Put some on your toes, in between the toes, stops any sort of additional friction. It's quite comfortable.
Yeah, you can just Google sports lube or anti-chafing lube. You know, they come in all types. You can get ones that are scented, unscented. I would look out for ones that say non-greasy and also non-marking. Some lubes can leave stains on your kit. But if I'm doing a long run, which for me is anything over 15 miles, I will absolutely religiously put some on my nipples, put some in between my thighs, and on my feet. And it just means this, I don't have to worry about chafing, even if, you know, I get really sweaty and my t-shirt is hanging quite heavy, or, you know, my feet are really hot. It just gets the job done. It's just a kind of a belt and braces approach.
So shorts.
Shorts. Again, you and I have very different tastes in this. You like a short short to show off your muscular thighs.
Mate, I like a short short, and I've got quite into like a half tight, not like a capri, not below the knee,
a half tight,
but just like a short, you know, like a basically like lycra shorts,
like a cycling short.
Yeah, like a cycling short, but without the padding. Yeah, I've got quite into those.
Oh, okay. And do you wear normal shorts over the top?
I definitely do not.
Oh, you don't?
No. They've got a liner in them. The ones that I've got, so there's some Tracksmith makes some very nice ones that have got a liner to them. And I think that Perlazumi used to make a pair. I think even Nike have started making. Basically, you've got to have a liner. But you know when you know, there needs to be a frontage to it for modesty. But yeah.
There does.
Definitely. If you ever had a sort of a chafed inner thigh from a short short, a half tight is quite a good thing to look at, because there's absolutely zero chafing and they're very comfortable. You've just got to get over the appearance aesthetic issues, I guess, is the main concern. But anyway,
yeah,
shorts, you're right.
Comfort and aerodynamics are everything with shorts for me, and this is one of the areas where I'm going to recommend spending a little bit more money.
Yeah.
It's obviously different for women, because a lot of women choose to wear leggings of some description, whether they're full length 7/8 capri or whatever.
Mm.
And skorts, a combination of skirts and shorts, are becoming increasingly popular for women, which is something that kind of sprang up from the trail running scene.
Yeah.
In terms of blokes wearing shorts, I would say that where your money goes, the more you spend, is that it's more ergonomically designed, which simply means it's not going to ride up. You know, when you get that horrible thing, it's riding up on your inner thighs and you have to keep pulling it down because it's getting tucked up under your groin. The more expensive the short, the less likely it is to do that. And it's, you know, the less baggy they are, the less likely, you know, I would be circumspect about buying running shorts that have pockets in them. I do have shorts like that, but I make sure that if there are pockets in my shorts, they are zip ones, so that when they are closed, I can zip them up and you don't have the flap of the short sticking out, which your hands can catch when your arms swinging past, which drives me nuts. You don't want them catching the wind. You just want to be able to forget that you're wearing the shorts, and often that comes with spending something like, well, shorts can go anywhere up to 80 quid, but I would say 30 to 50 quid, you're going to get a very, very decent pair of shorts that are going to last you a long time, aren't going to stink the house out within half a dozen runs, are going to be very comfortable and supportive, and unobtrusive and ergonomically designed.
And then T-shirts, most performance tees these days will be obviously a synthetic construction. And again, they can go up to sort of £80, I think, can't they?
Yeah, they can at the really top end. But I mean, would I spend my own money on 80 quid on a single running t-shirt? No, I wouldn't. I do have some of those in my wardrobe, but you know, I have t-shirts from Decathlon that cost, you know, 10 or 12 quid. And there were definitely sort of horses for courses in that area. Everybody's got their favorite race day t-shirt, which you obviously have to wear. I think it's perfectly possible to get a really functional t-shirt that's kind of for men. It'll be just a fairly standard cut, box shaped, flat lock seams, which means, you know, the seams are kind of double knitted down inside so they don't rub against your skin. And ones that are reasonably breathable for like sort of 12-15 quid. I've got t-shirts that are 20 quid, 25 quid. Adidas do some good ones, you know, at that kind of like price point. It's kind of up to you, really. But, you know, the more you get, the higher you go up, the more sophisticated the fabrics are, probably the more ethically sourced, the greener that they are in terms of the fabrics and the production processes that have been used. And then obviously, simply put, that like the cooler and more exclusive the brands. But really, I would say you should be able to get yourself five running t-shirts for somewhere between sort of 100 to 150 quid, and they'll see you out for a long time.
Yeah, I would agree. The way that a t-shirt hangs is going to be important. The way that it moves when you sort of run in side to side, if it has a lot of material to it, then it begins to interfere with what you're with you and what you're doing. It's when chafing can occur. So you do want a kind of like, you know, big and baggy running t-shirts aren't necessarily what you're looking for here. You want to make sure that it's, you know, flattering. You don't want to buy something that isn't flattering, because you won't want to wear it, you won't like running in it. I've 100% been guilty of putting something on that I thought looked good but was actually awful to run in, because, you know, I thought it was good or cool or whatever I thought it at the time, and it's just affected how you run. So yeah, I think that's definitely something you can try on as a t-shirt, and go and just see how they all fit. But as you say, I mean, I've got ones that cost, I've got DHB ones that I love, which are probably 15 quid, and I've got some 50 quid dry fit ones, which are equally brilliant. So, yeah, I think that t-shirt stuff comes down to, like all t-shirts that you buy in any shop, the cut and the fit will be the main thing that you need to look at.
Yeah, it'll be stuff like, as well, if it's a t-shirt that's got, you know, like a quarter zip on it, you know, the zips will be more expensive and better quality the higher you go. You know, the stitches will be stronger. There'll probably be reflective details on it to make you more visible in lower light, stuff like that. The thing that I would say with regards to, if people are listening saying, well, I really am on a budget, and I don't have 100 to 150 quid for five t-shirts, and I want to go as cheap as possible. The cheaper you go with t-shirts, at the bottom end, two things are almost certainly going to happen with that t-shirt once you start using it and washing it. It will bobble very quickly, and it will smell very quickly. I mean, I'm sure you and I and people listening have run past other runners before whose t-shirts absolutely hum when you go past them, and then you clock that it's a kind of like a budget brand.
Yeah.
those aren't necessarily deal breakers though. If you don't care about those things, that's fine. The t-shirt's kind of basic structural integrity will hold up and it's not going to chafe you to bits and stuff. It's just obviously a lot of people would prefer to have tops that lasted longer before it got to that point.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few brands out there. There's a brand called Polygene, which is like a coating that can be added to t-shirts, which is
correct,
which is a sort of antibacterial coating which stops it from smelling really bad. Some t-shirts will incorporate silver into it, which can, again, is antibacterial. So they're all sort of they're also price point bits to look out for if that's something that you want to make sure you don't have.
If you do have a little bit more money to spend and you're curious about why you're seeing a profusion of merino wool tops around, it's because merino wool is kind of it's the sort of holy grail of running apparel fabrics, really. It's obviously taken from a particular type of sheep. It is extremely soft and luxuriant feeling. It's very, very durable and will last you years. It is naturally antibacterial, which means it won't, you know, it takes a lot longer to start smelling for the kind of like the odor to get caught in the weave. And it's also naturally temperature regulating. It's got a very neat trick where you can wear the same t-shirt largely in kind of spring and autumn, because it will warm you up if you're a bit chilly, and bizarrely, it will cool you down if you're a bit hot.
So there we go. There's a whole world of stuff. You just need to, you know, you can spend hours on the Runner's World website if you want, looking at all of the different bits of kit. But I think from a starting point of view, those are your kind of key elements: good shoes, comfortable shoes, invest in some socks, find some shorts which you will forget that you're wearing, but do remember to wear shorts. That's very important. And
or leggings.
Yeah, exactly. And then, t-shirt, something that's comfortable, because otherwise you just won't enjoy it at all. And I think those are probably the sort of four key bits of kit that you need.
I think, well, there's probably one other area that we should kind of briefly cover off, which is watches.
Oh,
devices.
True.
There will probably be a whole podcast devoted to this.
I reckon that's a separate podcast. So let's use that as a little teaser and keep people listening for the GPS watch special that we're going to be
doing. Chapter and verse on vertical oscillation and ground contact time.
Oh my god, who doesn't want to listen to that? But mate, thank you so much for showering us with your fountain of knowledge.
Welcome.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. A big thanks to Kerry McCarthy for joining me, and of course to you for listening. Apologies for the audio quality. We had a few technical issues with this week's podcast, but we'll be back in fine fettle for next week. The subscriber offer for listeners is still available, so hearstmagazines.co.uk/runnersworldpodcast to get this exclusive listener offer of 3 issues for only £5. The Runner's World podcast is available on Acast, iTunes and all your favourite podcast apps. Please just search Runner's World UK. Thanks for listening and we will see you again next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.